from the beginning.
And I was shown that that Lucifer would return, that the UN and the Vatican were going to be completely behind it, again, under false pretenses. He's going to show up and say, I'm here to save the day, right? And okay, fine, you know.
Yeah, of
go
course,
ahead,
you can
try.
Say whatever you want. But I've always hated censorship. It's the internet.
Sometimes, you know, once they get you for your first love bite, well, it depends on how aware you are, right?
First of all, as you know, the Anunnaki and the Draco are enemies. Second of all, underneath Baghdad was a stargate that was created by the Anunnaki so that they could transfer from Jupiter to the Earth.
I'll never see the sun. I could just end it all, but the demons will have won.
Actual practitioners that, you know, some are good and some use their magic for good and to heal and to help, and others do use it for evil. And, you know, in some cases, you know, people really were using
this is too much sometimes.
From the broken ruins of Babylon, this is the end of days. Days. I know. I am the greatest singer of all time. I understand. I am Daniel, your host of End of Days Radio, broadcasting to you all the way from the shimmering Emerald City, right here in the heart of the Pacific Northwest. Today's date is April 22nd, 2018. What a wonderful day it is it not? Spring is in the air. Little bunnies are hopping around trying to mate with one another. As the flowers bloom and the wonderful scent of spring enters the air, it makes us feel so alert and makes us feel so happy and enthusiastic about the future, does it not? Today's guest is Miguel Connor. Miguel Connor is a professional storyteller, digital anthropologist, author, and the host of my favorite Gnostic podcast, Aeon Byte Radio. Yes, that's right. Aeon Byte Radio. He has lectured, appeared at such events as the Golden Dawn, Mythicist Milwaukee, the Alan Eisberg Show, Magic Radio. How do you listen to that? Rune Soup. How do you listen to that? Skeptico. Probably don't want to listen to that. The Higher Side Chats. I do listen to that. And the Gnostic Countercultures Conference at Rice University. Sounds like a great guest, does it not? I've said, does it not, too many times, did I not? But, all of you, you know the drill. You don't have to just listen to the interview, you can stick around. Of course, the interview is the main dish of this evening, but we also have dessert. And by dessert, I mean our wrap-up show. If you like news, if you like letters from listeners, if you like fun hijinks and things of that nature, then stick around. There's plenty to talk about. But until then, it's time. It's time to call our guest. I'm a little early, so hopefully he picks up. And if he doesn't, I'll just let it keep ringing and when he does pick up, I'll edit it all out later. So let's go ahead and call him.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hey, Daniel.
Hello. Welcome to the End of Days.
Thanks for having me.
Am I pronouncing your name right, Miguel?
You got it. First time, the right time, yeah.
Awesome. I'm hearing a little interference. It sounds like a clicking, like a fan or something like that. Any idea what that might be by any chance?
Let me turn off the fan. Is that better?
No, it must not be the fan.
Hmm.
Kind of going ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta.
That's weird. No, there's absolutely no sound in this room.
Hmm. Well, let's see here. Let me make sure it's not. How about I try calling you back, and if, it,
yeah,
if
that,
that doesn't
might
work,
do
then,
it.
Yeah, if that doesn't work, we'll just full steam ahead.
All right.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. I heard clicking, but on your side now. Now it's gone.
Yeah, that clicking seems to be ever present. But it looks like we're just going to have to live with it. It's just an effect, I guess, an added effect.
Yeah, that is odd. I don't hear anything at all. It sounds clear to me. Your voice, my voice, everything.
Yeah, who knows with the Skype and...
Yeah, I've been there many times. Usually I use Adobe Audition, and if I can get that sound, I can have this thing where I can clean up and just isolate that one sound.
Oh, nice.
Like a fan or a clicking or really anything, but it's a matter of finding that sound, and sometimes, most of the time it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Well, one thing that is interesting about you is you've got one of those deep voices.
Yeah, I don't think much about it. I mean, it's just the voice I've always had, but that's what people tell me.
And what is going on? What is new in your life? Anything new or interesting that you'd like to start off with?
No, not really. Same old, same old. Got back from the Gnostic Conference, the Gnostic America Conference at Rice University. So it was a good time about a month ago, 3 weeks ago. So there was a lot of good stuff. A lot of cool people hung out there. Mitch Horowitz, Eric Davis, and a whole bunch of scholars and researchers. So that was awesome. So got some new insights on Gnosticism and modern culture and all that. But that's really about it.
You're still learning, aren't you?
We all are, man. As soon as you think we know it all, we've lost it all.
And just to backtrack a little bit all the way to the beginning of your life, Miguel, where are you originally from? What was it like for you growing up, and where did that take place, if you don't mind answering that?
Well, I was originally born in Lisbon, Portugal. Father was American Irish. My mother was Portuguese. He was in oil. He was a geologist. So we moved around a lot, places like Africa, Mexico, Peru, Brazil, always moving around a lot. And I eventually came as a teenager to get my education here in the United States. So I think all that moving around in different cultures certainly informed my view of the world, because I was exposed to so much. So I knew that there was a lot more than whatever country or culture's official narrative was of religion or government and all that. So it definitely expanded my consciousness. But as a kid, I was always kind of that anxious, never satisfied dreamer kind of kid from the get-go. And my teenage years is probably not surprising as others who are into this stuff, who are into the esoterica are. I mean, it's the whole lots of science fiction reading, lots of Dungeons and Dragons, smoking pot, writing poetry, learning music, and all that good stuff. So I think all this combination certainly made me a searcher, a seeker of what's hidden and what's out there.
And did you have any sort of religion or belief system pushed on you during your childhood or early teens?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my dad was an atheist, but he was more not the new atheist. He was a classical atheist. he believed that he was going to live without religion. He had no use for it. He didn't want to talk about it. He didn't want anybody to talk to him about it. He was just going to live his life. And I know after he passed away, he had told my stepmom that, yes, he really thought there was a probably some sort of divine intelligence or higher intelligence that was the source of everything. But again, he had chosen the atheist life, which was he was just going to live without God and religion while he was down here on Earth. My mom was a very devout Catholic, so, but again, we're talking how Catholicism was in the 70s and 80s, very ecumenical, very pretty open-minded, or maybe I was just lucky that that's the kind of parish we would end up, because there was always an open mind to try to study Buddhism or mythology or try to have some cross discussions with other religions and really be informed. So, and I eventually even went to a Catholic university, which was run by Basilians, and they were very also, I don't know about open-minded, but they were very scholarly. They wanted to understand everything, and that sort of got infused into me too. And so we learned everything from beyond the Catholic Church, philosophy, again, other religions, other a lot of mythology. So I think, yeah, so I was fused with these sort of two worldviews. And as I became an adult, of course, I started searching other paths. I always call myself a Catholic, but I started experimenting with going to Hindu ashrams and meditation and other forms of there were times in my life where I said, well, I'm going to try being an atheist, but that didn't work out. Or I remember one time I went through a crisis and I became an evangelical born-again Christian for about 6 months. That didn't work out. And I just kept seeking. And eventually it was really the when I started studying the Gnostics, that's when I found something that sort of fit my worldview and something that I found a lot of interest in. And something I really wanted to share with the world since so few people knew about it. So I started my podcast and so forth. And here I am. I don't really call myself a Gnostic because I think the Gnostics lost. Unless you're a Mandean or a Yazidi or one of those ancient religions that's still around but struggling for it to survive because of all the mess in the Middle East. There's no real unbroken lineage. So I like to call myself more of a heretic who really enjoys studying about Gnosticism.
When did you first ever hear the word Gnosis or Gnosticism?
Oh, that's interesting. It was actually in college. We would take classes whenever a priest would be teaching us undergrad history of the Old Testament or an undergrad the Apocalypse or something like that, they would sort of mention the Gnostics. Just it's almost like it was part of their talking points, like, oh, and by the way, there was this heretical group called the Gnostics, and they had ideas that were against the church, probably reincarnation, this and that, probably a good idea to stay away from them. And at the time, I didn't think much about them. I was like, okay, but it's kind of weird that these priests were just sort of throwing it in there. And again, I think later on is because the church and other Christian groups still sort of have a bad taste in their mouth about the Gnostics and what they represent. So that was the first time. And I remember kind of sort of going to the library and looking it up. And yeah, heretical Christians who probably believed in reincarnation. They were mystical, this and that. Not much. I didn't think much about it. And it was really only many years later, probably late 90s or even farther, when I started to, for example, the Da Vinci Code was very popular. There was an interest again in Knights Templar. Mary Magdalene was very big. There was more romantic books about her and all that. So I started hearing more about them, hearing about the Cathars and so forth. And then that's when I started slowly getting interested in them. I read like Elaine Pagel's The Gnostic Gospels and other books. And I liked their vibe. I thought they were cool, but I still pretty much consider myself a very sort of liberal, mystic Catholic. And it really was like around 2006 or so when I decided to read the Nag Hammadi Library in tandem with Philip K. Dick's Valis and started reading Carl Jung. I'd known Jung before, but from the eyes of him being influenced by Gnosticism and other experiences I had that year with ayahuasca and other, it was sort of a big combination of reading, studying, experiences, seeking. That's when I really went down the rabbit hole of Gnosticism.
Ayahuasca, how did that come together?
Well, sometimes things come together because they're supposed to come together. My uncle, he's the patriarch of a group called Santo Daime. They're a Brazilian Christian fusion. Well, they're a fusion of Christianity and sort of indigenous religion in the Amazons. And he had gotten into Santo Daime many years before that. And part of the ritual, or part of the culture, is taking ayahuasca and ayahuasca rituals. And he had brought it back and started a church in Lisbon, where I'm from. So I just went back that summer, and he's like, "Hey, you want to try this? I'm part of this religion. Let's check it out." And I had no idea what it was. I thought, okay, I'll try anything. I mean, I've been to I have worshipped at mosques, I've been to ashrams, I've been to evangelical churches. I always enjoyed experiencing how other people's faiths and how they go about rituals and so forth to get an experience. So I did it, and I had no idea what it was. I was in there, and there's people singing all these sort of happy-go-lucky Christian songs, but with very much sort of a tropical vibe. And I was like, "Hey, this is fun." And my uncle's like, "Well, drink this," and I drank it, and before I know, I was just I was tripping my life away, and I had an out of body experience. This was probably a few more times that I did it, and I saw some amazing things. I think that's when I had what I tell people my Abraxas vision, when I left my body and left space and saw sort of the font of all consciousness, that moment where consciousness becomes apparent, and you are connected with this pure consciousness. And I can't say it was a positive experience, but it was an experience that opened my mind to the universe and how vast the cosmos and the multiverse really is. And again, that was part of my experience that year. And again, it really informed everything I had. And of course, that interesting enough, while I was in Portugal too, I had a extraterrestrial encounter.
What?
And yes, I know, I know you've had one too, but this was odd because when I had it, I was completely sober. I was not on ayahuasca, and I was in a mountain and what I experienced, 20 other people experienced. Everybody was sober. Everybody was in different parts of the mountain because we were just hanging out. And so I was able to verify that what I experienced was true, and it was definitely extraterrestrial.
So this wasn't, there's no possibility that this was a hallucination. You had like 20 other people there seeing the exact same thing.
Right. And you couldn't even say it was a mass hallucination because some of the people were in different parts of the mountain because there had been a sort of a party or a festival or family gathering, and some people were down the road playing around with the motorcycle. Some other people were down there sitting outside on a bench. I was like walking with my son towards a mountain. So it was, and the funny thing is that my family told me that these things or whatever they were had been happening all summer, that it was almost like common knowledge in our little village outside of Lisbon that there were UFOs that summer, and people were so used to it, it wasn't even worth reporting. The newspaper reported it at the beginning of summer, and then they sort of like, "Well, it's old news." So, yes, I have to say, because I always like to be a skeptic, I always like to leave the possibility that I'm delusional, I'm insane, I'm seeing something that might be of nature. But as I started, you know, taking those possibilities off the table, it had to be extraterrestrial. Unless, as I've told people, some military the U.S. military or somebody has some sort of device that can move through the sky that nobody has seen, that really breaks all the laws of physics, if you know what I mean. Unless the military is lying to us about something and they got something hidden, then it would have had to have been some sort of extraterrestrial, otherworldly experience. It was like these lights moving at a speed that, I mean, 100 times faster than a comet, and zigzagging in all these patterns across the sky, which was just incredible.
Yeah, amazing. I think that most of the time when people see things like that, it probably is some kind of, I don't know, alien or higher dimensional being. It doesn't seem to me like the United States government or the military would be interested in giving people spectacular or inspiring visions of things.
Unless they're testing stuff. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I don't even like to call it extraterrestrial. I mean, I kind of like to stick with like Whitley Strieber talks about. It's just an otherness that manifests. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go down the hole of aliens or angels or spirits. I just call it an otherness because I know my brain sometimes is going to create a narrative that fits my culture or my mythology. But whatever it was not from normative reality. It was from beyond, whether it's another planet or dimension. I am still waiting for more evidence or downloading, if you know what I mean.
Earlier you mentioned Abraxas, and I've heard you say this word on your show before. I was hoping you could explain, what is Abraxas?
Abraxas is a there's many ways to see Abraxas because it is this sort of, to some of the ancient Gnostics, like the sage Basilides, and there's different interpretations of what he wrote depending on the church father, but he's either the God above God, you might say the ultimate God, higher than the God of the Bible, because the Gnostics, many posited that the God of the Old Testament wasn't the supreme God. He was sort of he was a charlatan or a lower god that had sort of taken over earth because they saw his behavior in the Old Testament. Abraxas, some Gnostics contended, was the really supreme being, the font of all creation and consciousness and all that. Some said he was actually maybe not such a good guy, but this ultra-powerful god that sort of ruled and sustained the universe. So that's really all we know about Abraxas, and I mean, we know he's mentioned in a lot of magical incantations, in a lot of the Gnostic texts. He's a very shadowy figure. I think I like what Steve D, the chaos magician, called him. He's an unfinished god like Baphomet. He's sort of this very elusive mixture, fluid god that seems to become more and more maybe known as history goes. I mean, in ancient times, people would have a gem with the figure of Abraxas. Would be he had the body of a man, the head either, the head of a rooster or a falcon. He had a shield with the magical words I-A-O on it. He carried a chariot, but his legs were two serpents. And this was sort of they used him to sort of really not to call upon him, but to keep his power away because, again, like when my vision, Abraxas is, reminds me not as much as Baphomet, but more as sort of the god Shiva or Dionysus when you look at them in their primordial form, which these are the, you can't say they're the gods of madness, but they will drive you crazy because they are at the top of where consciousness, the supreme consciousness can be known, right at that nexus where all divinity comes out, where humans are, can just see it in its totality, and that would be very much sanity destroying. So they had these amulets to keep Abraxas' power away and to keep his presence out, because there are certain levels of divinity that you're just not meant to see. And interesting enough, when you look at the Knights Templar, we really don't have much evidence that they were into the occult, despite what the church said about them. But the one thing we know is that use the seal of Abraxas, the one I just described, they use that to hide their treasures. So they knew somehow that they knew about Abraxas. And later on, Carl Jung, who was very influenced by Gnosticism, he wrote during his period where he was trying to deal with his own madness and experiences, when he was really, he went through a struggle, he wrote a work called The Seven Sermons to the Dead. And this work is very dark. I would certainly tell your listeners, if they haven't read it, to check it out. It's very powerful. But he really tries to get into who Abraxas is, and he talks about Abraxas as, again, to know Abraxas is to go mad, and this is the God above God. He sits above God and Satan, and he sort of encompasses everything and nothing. He is the ultimate God of boundary eradication, limit destruction, and when there is really nothing, when you are completely free and there's no more definitions, there's no more identity, there's no more is or isn't, and you are just in the in the ultimate moment. But again, that could be very sanity destroying and overwhelming for anybody. So in a nutshell, that's basically the history of Abraxas.
Awesome. One thing that I wanted to ask you, because I want to hear your interpretation, of course, and how you would describe this, but who were these Gnostics? Who were they? How did this all start, and how did it end?
Well, their origins is still debatable, but most scholars assume they came out around the Christian age. Other scholars think that they might be even older. They might have been breakaway Jews or those who inherited the Egyptian mysteries. But the Gnostics were a group of, again, they were heretics from the get-go because of the ideas. And they basically posited four features or four standards, if you would. One was that we lived in a false world. We were trapped in a false world. Think of the Matrix. I always like to tell people, if you want to know Gnosticism, just watch the Matrix. So we are trapped in a false world, not even false, but as a chaos magician, Gordon White, called it, a fake world. It has been programmed to keep us trapped. And who programmed it? Well, that's number two. The Gnostics posited that these entities, they call them archons, Greek for prince, and Paul talks about them in his letters. They imprison us because each one of us holds something called a divine spark. I guess in the Matrix, it'd be the energy from our brains to light up the batteries. But they trapped us they keep us trapped because they feed off our divine spark, or our divine spark, they use it to sustain the universe, the prison that we're trapped in, which to them is their own little sick creation, their own little synthetic world that they can rule over and enjoy in their own arrogance. So, and number three is the Gnostics then posited. And again, a lot of this they got from seeing the Old Testament, seeing how Yahweh in the Old Testament behaved towards humanity, the imperfect world he created, and so forth. But they read other philosophical texts and religious texts and still came to the conclusion this was a faked world and we were in a prison planet, as a sort of a modern term that now people call it. So these archons kept us trapped, and how do we escape? Well, it was assumed that there was a call from beyond the world. Our divine spark was really shared from this supreme intelligence or consciousness, or you can call them Abraxas like some Gnostics did. And that was our real home. We shared this divinity with this supreme intelligence or consciousness, this God above God. And this God basically through intermediaries would try to wake us up, would try to send, as they call him, the Gnostic revealer. Again, look at the Matrix and think of Morpheus, who would be a Gnostic revealer. He comes from the beyond the Matrix to sort of wake us up in some way, to sort of give us hints, to sort of stir our divine spark, to let us know that we belong beyond the very stars themselves. And the Gnostics saw, for example, ancient figures like Jesus, Paul, Buddha, Mary Magdalene, the goddess Sophia, and so forth, as these Gnostic revealers that could wake us up. And through ecstatic rituals, because the Gnostics were very, you might say, shamanistic, through ecstatic rituals and through an understanding of the mind, a changing of the mind, we could be transformed and awakened. We could become perfected and liberated from the Matrix, from this false world, from this prison planet. And once we were awakened, we would be able to awaken others, and eventually we would be able to, well, hopefully after this life or other lives, because they posited a reincarnation, we'd be able to, our divine spark would be released and join the supreme consciousness and escape the grasp of those dreaded archons. So that would say that's a quick summary of who the Gnostics were. And of course, that didn't go well with all mainstream religions or ruling governments of the time, of those Greco-Roman times or even Jewish times, because the Gnostics basically said all our governments, our education, all our schools, all our everything of this world is a false construct kept, created to keep us ignorant, to keep us asleep, to keep us docile. And we were simply the chattel of the archons, and we needed to get away from these gods, from these government institutions. We needed to get away from the religions and the temples and the churches and find our own power so we could escape.
And they were mostly rounded up and killed and burned alive, weren't they?
There is actually a pretty little evidence. There are records of Gnostics being persecuted. There are records of their churches being destroyed, their lodges being destroyed, and churches being destroyed as well. They write about it, but we don't know. It seems I think what we know is they did lose. In history, they did lose. Once Rome became Christian, they were simply taken out. And some of their later manifestations, the Manichaeans, which were sort of a late classical period, early medieval times, they were certainly persecuted in many parts of the world. In medieval times, we certainly have from historical records from the church that the Cathars, who were sort of a latter-day Gnostic group, and the Bogomils, they were definitely persecuted. In fact, one thing most people don't know is that the Inquisition was not initiated in the 12th, 13th century against witches or Jews or gypsies or Muslims. It was initiated against the Cathars. So the church started the Inquisition because they could not handle that Gnosticism was rising once again. And once that machine got going and they were able to exterminate the Cathars, wipe them off the face of the earth, then this machinery went to other minorities. So, yes, and throughout history, the Gnostics have certainly gotten, they've gotten pretty much wiped out one way or another.
And what was this demiurge?
The demiurge was the ruler of the archons. He was the chief archon, as they called it. The Gnostics associated him with the God of the Old Testament, although he had characteristics from other gods. And to them, he was the creator of this world, of this imperfect world, of this prison planet. And he ruled it. In many of their texts, they depict him with a lion head and the body of a dragon. But of course, that's pretty much all symbolical of what he was, this haughty being, this, you know, he was the supreme being of the material world, but he still was very ignorant. In some of the texts, the demiurge is the daughter of Sophia. Sophia is long before the myth of Lucifer. Sophia was part of the aeons, and the aeons are the characteristics of the supreme consciousness, the levels of thought, and she was wisdom. And she disobeys this place called the Pleroma, which was, you might say, what defined the supreme consciousness. And the reasons differ. She rebels against, and she falls out of the Pleroma. And in her anguish, she gives birth to the Demiurge. The Demiurge, you might say, is an expression of all her sorrow and anger and so forth. And the Demiurge then decides to create, take her power, take her essence, which is us, our divine spark, scatter them into the chaos, and create the material world. And then he creates the archons to rule it. But that's sort of the ancient myths, and they associated him very much with the God of the Old Testament. In a lot of the Gnostic texts, he quotes, he says things like what Yahweh says in Isaiah, "I am a jealous God, there is no God but me." He wants everybody to forget that there is a higher realm, and that he is the supreme, he is the font of everything. And what's interesting, which a lot of people don't know, is that the Gnostics turning everything upside down, being the ultimate deconstructionists, they the Demiurge, if you read Plato and his Timaeus, the Demiurge is actually a very positive entity. He is the one who sort of gives order to everything that's outside the world of forms. And he, in the Neoplatonism, even in forms of early Christianity and so forth, the Demiurge, and even in the Hermetica, the pagan version of the Gnostics, the Demiurge is a positive figure, but the Gnostics turned that upside down and made him into a malevolent entity, and even just as rebellious. I use the term archons, and Paul in his epistles, he uses it in a negative way, but the archons was an honorific title for Roman magistrates and judges and so forth. It wasn't meant to be have negative connotations, and the Gnostics turned that upside down. I mean, if the Gnostics were very good at something, is they were good at deconstructing and turning the old models upside down, and showing the world, or trying to show others how corrupt this whole thing, things that we took for granted, things that we accepted in our world, were not as they seemed. I mean, they wrote in one text how, you know, it was the evil Demiurge who wanted to destroy mankind. And so he built the ark to save his little pet Noah. And the powers of the Aeons, or the Supreme Consciousness, sent down Nerea, one of the daughters of Adam. And she tries to stop them. She burns the ark down and all that. And eventually she fails, and the Demiurge ends up killing, you know, millions of people across the world in a flood and so forth. But that's one thing you have to understand about the Gnostics, is they were, you might say they were really into creating fan fiction. But it was fan fiction. It was creating different versions of a story based on their experiences they had, and trying to put down these experiences and trying to express the truth of the experiences in ways that others would understand by changing around the religions of the time and changing around the important stories of the time so they could express it. I mean, it may sound silly, but I mean, we can look at, as an example, the church father Irenaeus always complains, they were just pumping out gospels, and Jesus is doing this in this gospel, and another gospel he's doing this, and how many Jesus they are. And it's like your own personal Jesus, like Depeche Mode sang. But when we look today, I mean, we can look at different versions of Batman. We can look at Christopher Nolan Batman, or Adam West Batman. And in each Batman really tells us something about our culture, about what we are, what Batman we like, really tells us about who we are as people. And what Batman does can tell us, express really deeper truths about what we want out of the world in total, about where we're going and where we are as human beings. So in a way, that's what the Gnostics were doing. It was a sort of a therapy, fan fiction, and expressing deeper truths that they'd experience in a way that could translate to other audiences.
Which Batman do you prefer?
Oh, that is a good question. I probably like Frank Miller's Batman.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the one, or Alan Moore's Killing Joke. As far as the movies, I might be, again, I'm probably a heretic. None of the Batmans has really, really touched me.
What about the old TV show with Adam West?
When I was a kid, that was great. I mean, that's the thing about fan fiction. As a kid, this was heaven. This was it. Batman and Pow Wow and nobody's going to get hurt, and it's going to end the next week and all that. But as I grew up, I needed other Batmans to understand myself in this world and understand what this culture was and the darkness of humanity, as well as the daunting heroism, the thankless heroism of other Batmans. So, yeah, again, Batman like Jesus and other mythic heroes really expresses deeper truths about ourselves, and often can lead us to roads to transcendental truths.
That makes a tremendous amount of sense. I suppose one thing that's always struck me about Batman is the fact that he doesn't even really try to be happy. his idea of happiness is going out and dressing like a weirdo and fighting with people. He doesn't seem to think and act like a normal person who typically goes after pleasure. Is he just mentally ill? What's up with him?
Well, that is the thing, right? That's why he's so fascinating. He's obviously dealing with a lot of trauma. He's obviously, from his childhood, he's obviously driven in some sort of quest to liberate the world or something like that, or whatever he's trying to do. And yeah, you do wonder, I mean, is there happiness? I think at the end of the day, it's not about Batman being happy. It's about him being free. Sometimes we do things like him jumping across a building at night with the rain hitting him and all that. He's probably not happy, but he is free. In a way, he's free. This is his sacred duty, his sacred quest, and he doesn't know anything else. Anything else he do, he won't be free. He might have pleasure. He might have happiness. He can buy anything and get any girl he wants, but at the end of the day, he's not liberated.
And speaking of movies, I'm sure one movie that comes to mind when talking Gnosticism has got to be The Matrix, the idea of a false world and perhaps this artificial intelligence consciousness could be likened to the Archons or even the Demiurge itself. What do you think about that? Could the movie The Matrix actually be reflecting reality?
I think it is. I mean, yeah, I always tell people, if you want a Gnostic gospel, watch The Matrix. Watch Snowpiercer, The Truman Show, Westworld, the show. I mean, there's so many examples out there. Altered Carbon. It's becoming more and more prevalent, and this vibe is becoming more acceptable. I mean, there's been people like Elon Musk and others saying this world is probably programmed. We're probably living in some sort of digital construct or some sort. So I myself, on a personal level, I think there is truth to that, or I wouldn't be so interested in these cats for all these years. I think, yeah, I do think we live in a prison planet, and I think there are entities, consciousness, otherness, whatever you want to call them, that are keeping us down. They want to keep us ignorant. They want to keep us asleep, docile, as I said, and in a way they are feeding upon us. And again, the beauty about Gnosticism, it works on different levels, even if you don't believe in the metaphysical. You could believe it at an alien level, like David Icke or somebody like that. Or you could believe it in a simple political level. I mean, there are the elite in our government. There are those, what's it called today, the deep state. And they seem to keep us all in shadow, in prison, a golden prison or a prison of our minds. And they seem to feed on us so they can hoard all the resources, and we are basically their chattel. So on different level, or your own work, your boss could be an Archon or a Demiurge. But yeah, The Matrix is, it works on different levels. And yes, The Matrix is easy. I mean, the architect, he's the Demiurge. The agents are the Archons. Neo is, of course, in Gnosticism, it always talks about you saw Christ, you must become a Christ. You must earn salvation before you die. So Neo is sort of this human that can become Christ-like while he's alive and gain all this enlightenment. And Morpheus is, of course, the Gnostic revealer, as I mentioned. So the parallels are there for really understanding Gnosticism. If you just watch The Matrix or other movies like that.
And earlier on, you had mentioned an author that did a book on chaos magic. Have you gotten into that at all? Have you studied chaos magic?
No, not in depth. I mean, you think I should, because for some reason I enjoy reading about chaos magic. I enjoy Grant Morrison. Again, as one thing about the Gnostics, that they were, as my friend calls them, they were platform neutral when it came to their religious practices. In other words, they drew from different things and sort of threw it all together or threw it against the wall so they could get these ecstatic experiences. So you would think, I mean, in a way, the Gnostics might have been the original chaos magicians, because they were so, again, they were just throwing everything they could together, philosophy, rituals. I mean, some Gnostics would leverage sex magic. Others would do sacramental, church sacramental duties. There was contemplation. That's what they did. So, as myself, I really haven't, for my practice these days, it's pretty basic because of the situation I'm in my life. It's just basically hypnotherapy, dream analysis, meditation, contemplation, prayer, and so forth. So, no, I have not expanded into chaos magic.
Could the demiurge actually be Satan himself?
Yeah, he could. I mean, if that's a mythology you want to live, you want to pursue, I mean, let's put it this way. The idea of Satan being this sort of devil or this evil person is kind of a late one. I mean, in the Old Testament, he is one of the sons of God. He is more of God's tester, or you might say prosecutor, if you would. If you look at the book of Job, he is the one who has like a wager with God to torture Job, and he's pretty much out free. In fact, one of the misconceptions that Christianity has is assuming that Satan's in hell. If you look at the Bible, he is nowhere in hell. I mean, Paul calls him the principality of the air. He's always in the air. That seems to be his domain, is actually the heavens. And there's nothing about him being in hell. I think in the book of Revelation, there's some demon called Abaddon or something like that that's in the pit of hell. But I don't know if that's even, you could even say that's Satan. So Satan is sort of a later thing. But also the Bible also does say the Gospel of Mark. I mean, Satan does says, I rule all the kingdoms of this earth and everything you see I own. And Paul is always talking about the God of this world. People assume he's talking about Satan, but he could be talking about the demiurge, or there's sort of a transitional period where you go from demiurge and bad angels and archons to Satan. But if you want to take the view that Satan rules this world, that this is his world really, and Jesus and the angels are trying to free our souls from it, then you could certainly equate Satan to the demiurge. And in fact, now that I think about it, the Cathars, those medieval Gnostics, again, they appear in the Da Vinci Code and in other literature. They said that Satan ruled the world, and that the concept of the demiurge had been lost through history. So by the 12th, 13th century, it was they simply made Satan into the demiurge, the ruler of this world that was keeping us all as slaves.
And Gnosticism itself, it has kind of, I don't know if you'd say it's lived on, but it's experienced some popularity in secret societies, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the Gnostics, like the Neoplatonists, the Hermetics, and some of the older ones seem to have gotten lost as Christianity rose and took over Western Europe. But these were all considered esoteric, ecstatic. They were part of the lineage of the hallowed, the Platonist movements and the Pythagoras and so forth. So they were always, the Gnostics were always of interest to those who wanted to sort of study in secret, the alchemists and the scholars and the mystics and so forth, and sort of got passed underground. So, of course, they did make their way into secret societies. I don't know, most secret societies, whether you're talking about the Freemasons or the Rosicrucians or any of those, I don't think they ever adopted or even found or even liked the view of the Gnostics about the prison planet and the demiurge. But they certainly felt that the Gnostics had a lot of value, that they were, it was unfair what happened to them, and they were glad to take the richness of their literature whenever they could find it, and their ideas of rebellion and so forth, and just sort of adopt them and keep them. So yeah, I think the Gnostics and any occult are always in the background, like are all these other movements that we're trying to, that at one time had to be secret, had to be underground.
Do you have any theories on what the Ark of the Covenant might have been?
No, I mean, probably not much. I mean, I think if we look at Egyptian lore, we do have evidence of the Egyptians carrying around their own arcs. And within this arc was the presence of whatever deity they at the time had allegiance for, whether the king or general or something like that. So it seems that the Israelites simply did the same thing. They had their own ark, and this was the presence of Yahweh. of Yahweh was in it. So what happened, we don't know, because it's sort of, you read the Old Testament, and there's the ark, and then it just vanishes. I mean, it's like it doesn't get brought up again anywhere. There's no mention of it. There's no reason why it disappeared and so forth. I mean, and of course you get a lot of apocryphal legends that Solomon gave the Queen of Sheba the Ark, and that made its way to Ethiopia. That's where it's been hidden. In fact, the Ethiopian Christians still claim they have it, and it's a secret where it is. In fact, there's many versions of it, and most of them are false, and we do not know where the real one is. But I've had friends who have gone to Ethiopia, and they say they've gone and seen the true version of the Ark, but unlike Indiana Jones, they didn't like melt or anything. They just saw it.
How do you feel about, well, one popular topic in the paranormal conspiracy world is the whole ancient astronauts thing. You know, I don't know, 7-10 years ago, it really took off, especially with the show with George Tsoukalos. In your opinion, does ancient astronauts fit into the Gnostic way of seeing things?
Well, it would, yeah, of course. I mean, that would certainly go, I mean, we can talk, would go with David Icke's cosmology and even John Lamb Lash and others. I mean, if we are created, I mean, in the Gnostic myths, we are created by the demiurge, but we house that divine spark. And in a way, Scientology sort of stole that, because we are, what, Thetans that were trapped inside bodies, yeah, by this evil being, and we're cast on Earth and we need to wait. In fact, I was at a conference, and there are internal memos in Scientology talking about, this is very Gnostic, we must use Gnosis to wake up our Thetans. So the idea of us being trapped or created by these other beings who are not perfect, who are not divine, who don't have our best interests, sort of created us to trap us or keep us down here as some experiment or the feed off of us, that's certainly very Gnostic. And of course, some people say, well, that's goes back to the Sumerians and then Anunnaki. Yeah, but that was definitely in the air. So I think the Gnostic myths and elements certainly jive with the ancient astronaut very well. Now, what is the real truth? I don't know. I mean, I don't want to. I think that we have some beings that or otherness that are in such a level that we can't comprehend them. I don't think they're these aliens. And if they are, they would be interdimensional entities. So I guess they would be archons. They would be pretty powerful. But at the end of the day, they would not be something we want to join and something we want to get past.
It sounds like the archons very well may have been these reptilian aliens. Perhaps David Icke is completely right.
He could be. I mean, I'm not. I don't know. I mean, I think, again, I like to think of Whitley Strieber and not say anything. We are products of our cultural surroundings. We do see things in a mythological way, like Ezekiel might have seen angels and other beings, and in our modern times we assume these are aliens or so forth. So I know how we see this otherness, these other higher entities or intelligence, is going to change depending on our mythology and our culture. So I never want to sort of commit to anything, because I know human history and I know the history of consciousness, but he could be right. I mean, I know I scoured the Gnostic text. There is not one mention of any archon looking like a lizard, and the archons are pretty beastly beings, as the Gnostics describe them, although these beastly qualities always are symbolical of some characteristic and so forth. But, yeah, who knows?
And Miguel, what actually made you want to start a Gnostic podcast?
Good question. I think it was at the time, with my experiences in Portugal with ayahuasca and the extraterrestrial experiences, plus other experiences I had, again, that I was having an interest I felt I had found something wonderful that I wanted to share with the world. And I didn't know how to, because I was just starting to learn about these cats. I mean, it was my first year, and there was so much to learn. And I beyond learning about the Gnostics, I needed to couch them in the times they were. So I needed to learn a lot about ancient Christianity, paganism, classic philosophy, and how they evolved and how they related to our times with the Matrix and the prison plan. It was so much. So I said, you know, it will be years before I could ever write a book. It'll be years before I can ever really put a cogent case or description out or exposition, because there's so much. I said, well, the next best thing is, why don't I invite people who are experts and I have them share with the world? And I learn as the audiences learn, and we all learn together. And it went very well, because that was definitely a topic that it's very niche, and there's not a lot of platform. And we're talking, I started my podcast 10 years ago. Now, if you write, there's a more interested in Gnosticism, again, because of David Icke, because of the times we live in that seem very much like the Matrix or something like that. So there's more of it. And also occultism has really grown. New Age has grown. So the Gnostic ideas are out there. They're more accessible. But at the time, there wasn't really that much out there. The Nag Hammadi still, even though it was published in 1979, it's a lot of the insights and scholarship was just getting started or really maturing. So it was a great opportunity to really share with the world about these ancient heretics that history almost forgot, but as I like to think are more relevant than ever, because I think as a population, we can agree that we've been lied to. We are living in some sort of an illusion that our governments and our religious leaders and that our teachers have been keeping a lot from us, that they might not have our interests, and that these gods that people have worshipped and trusted for centuries haven't really given us much of a better world, that this world is still on the brink, that things are still pretty bad and only getting worse. So it seems to me that the Gnostic sensibility is just as important today as it was 2,000 years ago when the, you know, oppressive Roman Empire had their foot all over the world.
Do you feel that there's any chance we might be experiencing a new Gnostic Renaissance?
I would say no. I know that sounds cynical. I think there is a Gnostic awakening with people. I mean, the terms red pill are popular. The term archons are popular. I think people are waking up more. They're trying to push back. But at the end of the day, is how much do you want to commit? I mean, how far do you want to go? Does anybody really want to go as far as the Gnostics and go to all-out war with the gods or the aliens, with the governments, with the institutions? I don't know if the population really has the guts. And I always wonder, okay, so it seems we are awakening. I mean, it's great that podcasters like you and others are out. Activism is up. People are trying to find independent channels to express their truths. And these truths are about how we do live in a in a simulation, that we have been lied to, that we are being oppressed by wickedness in high places and so forth. But will we sell out as history has told it? Will there be a boot coming down? Will we be seduced by new gadgets and new things? Will there be a massive false flag that will keep us in line? Looking at history, it doesn't look good, but I certainly hope that as many people can wake up and as many people can find their own truths and find ways to transcend this world into liberation. I think that's what, as some writers have said, like Batman, what the Gnostics were seeking was not happiness, was not material rewards. They weren't seeking fame. What they were seeking was liberation, pure, complete liberation from the material world while being in the material world.
Probably my favorite part of your show is your elaborate intros. They're very theatrical. How did you get the idea for these long, theatrical, sort of inspiring intros?
Basically necessity. I think at the time I remember my equipment not being very good. And we were talking again over 10 years ago. And I mean, you and I just talked about how we still struggle with Skype and sounds and all that. It's still far from perfect. back then it was even worse. And then my recording equipment wasn't very good, so I just started thinking, you know, and I also was like, well, I don't know much about Gnosticism, so I need to relate it to what people know. Oh, wait, people know about The Matrix? They know about The Truman Show or The 13th Floor or Dark City, the movie. So if I throw these quotes in and I put some music to sort of alleviate the bad tech, the bad recording tech, then it'll be okay. And it was okay. I mean, it sort of, people were like, hey, this is a good production. This is it. And it sort of then grew as a sort of my way of writing my gospel, my own version of the Gnostic gospel, and showing it to the world. And it just became integrated into the overall show. And here we are.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. It, in my opinion, it has kind of a magical effect. Would you consider yourself to be a magician?
I would say anybody who creates something is a magician. I mean, when you read, yeah, I mean, like Alan Moore talks, all writers, all language is a form of magic. We're changing consciousness. We're changing behavior. And a lot of ways we can change reality, how people perceive reality and or experience reality. So, yes, I would say my introductions, I try to approach them as an artist, a writer. And I am a writer. And I think, yes, it's all art is magical at the end of the day.
And who have been some of your favorite guests that you've interviewed so far?
Oh, God, I love all of them. I mean, I know how hard it is to write a book. I know how hard it is to get your neck out there these days. So I really admire any of the guests. I mean, obviously, they're reoccurring guests that I've had good rapport with, and I really I see eye to eye with them. Some of them would be Robert Price, Gary Lachman, Eric G. Wilson. I mean, there's so many of them, and I really thoroughly enjoy what they say. And it's my hope that each one of them can bring insight to the audience and allow the insights, again, to find out a little bit more freedom in the world, a few more answers, or at least to see that there's so much more than what sensible reality has given us, what our culture has given it, and they can find more choices and seek again, I go back to the theme, seek more freedom.
If you could have anybody on your show, anybody in the world, who would you pick?
Anybody on the world? That is a good question. I can't think. I mean, obviously, if I could get Philip K. Dick to come back from the dead, he would be my first choice. For the living, I would probably be somebody like Alan Moore or Grant Morrison that are alive today that I can think of.
Do you, you kind of alluded to this, but you see the term Illuminati thrown around quite a bit. We know that at least secret societies do exist, but is there some kind of hidden core of it all, of enlightened individuals that are trying to reshape humanity? What do you think about the idea of an Illuminati?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's the Illuminati per se, the Bavarian group in the Enlightenment era. Was it 17th century around there? But I think that the elite are always trying, from the beginning of history, are trying to social engineer the masses and keep them subjugated. I think that's apparent. And I do think that they are probably using the occult. I mean, what's the saying? I forgot who said it. But millionaires don't use astrology, but billionaires use astrology. And when you see the symbols of their companies, you see sort of hidden rituals and what they wear and all that, and you start to put the dots together. And I think Chris Knowles does an excellent job in his Secret Sun blog, as do other synchromystics. You start to realize, yeah, it's probably very obvious that the elite are using magic against us in some way or another, that they are socially engineering us, that they are using eugenics against us. I think even from a historical basis, that's pretty sure. So yes, I think, and of course they need to keep the secret. I don't think there's one secret society you can point to, but as long as they're at the top, they will keep moving into these different NGOs and groups like the Council of Foreign Relations and the Skull and Bones. And then these things sort of have a lot of moving parts, and then they change. into other secret societies down the line, and sometimes the power structure changes from the oil to the tech to England to the United States and China. It's always shifting, but I think the game is always the same. It's, again, it's these archons trying to keep us down, trying to feed upon us and to keep us ignorant. And as the Hermetics always said, as above, so below. So if these people are doing this at the top, they might have spiritual representatives in higher planes, whether these are ancient aliens, lizard people, archons, or whatever. I think we don't know yet, but I think their effects, their presence, and what they've done to civilization and this planet are pretty apparent if you just take the red pill.
And you sound like a very well-read man, and I'm curious, who are your favorite authors?
Well, I think apparently it would be somebody like Philip K. Dick has a huge influence on me. As far as fiction, there's probably a lot. I mean, there's so many from Saul Bellow to Hemingway to I love Robert Anton Wilson. I mean, there's so many I could even do justice. Cormac McCarthy, I think he is incredible. And if you read a lot of his novels like Blood Meridian, you'll find very apparent Gnostic themes throughout his work. We don't know if it's intentional or not, because he claims to be Catholic and he doesn't give interviews. So, yeah, there's so many authors, I wouldn't even know where to start. I guess I kind of started.
What movies besides The Matrix do you feel are the most Gnostic?
Oh, boy, there's so many. I guess we could start with during that time, the late 90s, there was a renaissance, and it's almost like 9/11. Sort of squashed it a bit, because at the time of The Matrix, you also had Dark City, you had The 13th Floor, you had The Truman Show, you had David Lynch's Mulholland Drive, which is very Gnostic. So those are some powerful ones. In the more recent years, I mean, if you go to IMDb, just type in Gnostic movies, you'll get like 50, and there are good cases for each one of them. But you could talk more recent times, you could talk Snowpiercer, Inception, the Lego Movie. That might surprise many people, is very Gnostic when you think about it, because there's obviously the dad ends up being the demiurge of the whole false world of the Legos. At the top of my head, those are the ones that I can think of. But again, there's a huge list, and there's always good arguments. I mean, any movie which presents sort of a false reality ruled by these haughty agents, you know, it's going to be very Gnostic in the end.
It does kind of make you wonder, because this demiurge, he's supposed to kind of be forming the world, and it does sound close to the description of what an artificial intelligence might be like.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think when you look at the demiurge, he is very mechanistic. I mean, in the Gnostic texts, just like the architect of the Matrix, he wants order. He wants everything in one place. He wants a structured bureaucracy. The archons act more like sometimes like union thugs mixed in with bureaucrats. And yeah, he wants perfection. He wants structure. He wants everything. He doesn't want anything to step out of line. He wants all those divine sparks or energies accounted for, tallied, and not moving or causing any trouble. So, but as we know in our lives, because the demiurge, if you go from a psychological point, he really is our ego, that part of us that wants control over our girlfriends and our children and our bosses, and everything has to be structured in a certain way. But when you do that, it never works out, whether you're running the whole of creation or running your own life. I mean, there's it's the unknown. That's where the mystery is, and that's where the joy is. But the demiurge or the ego is not going to allow that, and will squash that. It will squash the unknown. It will squash the wonder, the unpredictable, the things that break down the barriers and expand the barriers and break us through to possibility and potential. So, yeah, you're exactly right.
And of course, I'm a big fan of your show, but it's my understanding that you're also an author. I'd love to hear about some of the books that you've written.
Sure. The two nonfiction books I wrote, Voices of Gnosticism and Other Voices of Gnosticism, those are transcripts of some of the interviews that I've done in the show that really define Gnosticism throughout time. And it includes Bart Ehrman, Elaine Pagels, Karen King, and other great minds in Gnostic and esoteric studies. But there's also a lot of writing on my own. I add a lot of writing and exposition and so forth, and introductions to each of these interviews so people can get a context about Gnosticism. But I've written a few, you might say, science fiction ones. I have the two novels. One originally came out in Warner Books. It was called The Queen of Darkness, but then I got the rights back and I renamed it Stargazer, and the sequel is called Heretic. And it is very Gnostic. It's about how, and I wrote this about the first draft, like, you know, 20 years ago, how vampires rebel, take over the world, and keep humans enslaved in these sort of concentration farms. And they sort of, again, they raise them like cattle and they feed off of them little by little. But everybody's forgotten how the vampires took over, that they incited a nuclear holocaust and then corralled the survivors and the surviving vampires and created these sort of city states in the ashen wilderness, and the world is covered in ash. And everybody's forgotten. In fact, the vampires have forgotten that they originally were humans. They're told that their demiurge, which is Lilith, the queen of the vampires, gives birth to them. So they've been told a lie too, and they've been told that humans are just animals. So you don't have to worry about eating humans because you are gods.
Oh, so there's a whole kind of parasitic Archon theme there.
Right, right.
Wow, I mean, that's pretty cool.
If vampires don't know that they used to be human and they think that humans are soulless animals, then there's no problem. They'll just eat humans and keep humans trapped. But what happens when one vampire starts having visions and questioning things, and he starts digging and he realizes, oh my God, that's not the truth of this world. There's a whole other history that happened, and we are not these gods, these supreme gods we thought we were. So there's two books of it and how this happens and a rebellion and all that. And then I have another book, which is more just a standard fantasy one called The Executioner's Daughter. Can't say there's any Gnostic themes. It's just sort of my own attempt at doing sword and sorcery. So those are basically my books in a nutshell.
Yeah, sounds like some pretty cool stuff. I suppose, like many authors, it would be pretty neat to see your books turn into a movie or TV series someday.
Yeah, it would be exciting. I've never really... I think I wrote a screenplay based on Stargazer years ago, but I never really went out and marketed or reached out. Just so much going on in my life. But yeah, hopefully it would be. It would make a great Gnostic drama there on the silver screen. And again, Gnosticism just works so well in science fiction because science fiction is so interested in dystopias. The Gnostics saw the whole of creation as one big dystopia. Science fiction is always about multiple realities, layered realities, and that's how the Gnostics saw. There was a false reality and a higher reality, but they were in different levels. And, of course, science fiction loves the idea of these shadowy rulers who controls us, and the idea of what's human and what's not human. I mean, you might say the Gnostics really believed in or addressed the idea of transhumanism 2,000 years ago because they always thought, look, we can become divine, but we can also become demonic. We can access these powers and shift our beings into a higher state or lower state. So that's why I think today there's such a huge connection, or why the Gnostic philosophy works so well in science fiction. And of course, you have the popularity of Philip K. Dick, who was very influenced by Gnosticism, and his stuff has influenced other writers, other directors. Without a doubt, the creators of The Matrix knew about Philip K. Dick, so his ideas still permeate our culture and influence science fiction.
And Miguel, I'm curious. Another popular topic you see floating around the conspiracy paranormal world is the idea of flat Earth. Could you give us a Gnostic perspective on flat Earth?
I guess the perspective would be, it seems like a straw man or a red herring. I mean, the idea at the end of the day is this flat earth a prison or is it not a prison? I mean, we are looking for liberation. I know we're supposed to find out the truth and the truth will set us free, but I think at the day it really needs to be higher truths. And of course the Gnostics were, they, as scholars have said, they were, you might say, the grad school of Christianity. They were very versed in Greek philosophy. They knew all about the Jewish texts and all that. So they were very learned. They were people of reason and so forth. But at the end of the day, it basically comes down to what is your gnosis? What gnosis is from the Greek for knowledge. But to them, it was a special type of knowledge. It was that knowledge that transformed you, made you reborn, and liberated you. So made you see the world for what it was. And at the end of the day, it was a world that you are, that is not home. Your home belongs somewhere else. And no matter what you think of this world, whether you like it or not, your home is, as I mentioned before, beyond the stars. So the whole flat earth, I don't think, again, it's more of a straw man. I mean, personally, I think we live in a prison planet, but it's probably some sort of round pear shape, something like that.
Do you feel that there's any possibility that we are in the end of days?
The question is not the end of what days. I don't think humanity is going to disappear, but are we at the end of the days when our consciousness finally disappears, when artistic aspects finally die, when our ability to reason goes away, when we start becoming just another species of animals without any of that creativity or invention or innovation within us? I think if you put it that way, I think we are at the end of the days. And but things can turn around. It just sometimes it's not a game of numbers. Sometimes it just takes a few to keep that sacred knowledge and that sacred art and that sacred vibe to survive. But as far as the apocalypse, end of the world, all that, no, I think. And even then, I would say the Demiurge would probably, he'll find another species or another life form to put that divine spark. Consciousness will continue. It's a matter of it's going to be a higher expanded consciousness or sort of a dulled, beaten down consciousness.
How about death and dying? In your opinion, what happens after we die?
Good question. I mean, obviously, like many, it's a thought I've thought about. But I don't think it's an end. Something goes on. I think when you look at it, even from a scientific way, and you start studying NDEs and all the research on reincarnation and all that. And then I put that with all the experiences I've had, out of bodies and visions and ghosts that I've seen and so forth, spirits, something goes on. The exact mechanics, I don't know, but I think that it's a very, like I like to say, it is a very busy universe out there. And it is a lot weirder than we imagine, and there is a lot going on. And I think when things end, our material ends, there's going to be a lot going on. Of course, sometimes I wonder, what if it's all about the eternal occurrence, like Nietzsche and Ouspensky thought? What if it's like Groundhog Day and we simply start over our lives and we continue until we get it right, until we get every piece right and we can come free from this karma? That's another possibility, but at the end of the day, we will evolve into something else, so it's a matter of what it is. So, death is not the end. Death is just, it is an illusion. And there's a lot going on.
Are you an H.P. Lovecraft fan?
I've enjoyed his work, yeah. I've read four or five of his books, yeah.
Which one was your favorite?
Good question. Was it, The Call of Cthulhu, or what's the one at the Mountains of Madness? I really like that one. So those two I really dug. The Dunwich Horror I thought was a little too thick for me, but those two books were awesome.
Could there be some reality in there?
Well, I mean, when you look at Cthulhu and the old ones, they seem to be straight out of the Archons, right? And straight out of the ancient astronaut. They are the true overlords of this dark, mechanistic, empty, meaningless cosmos. And they are keeping us down. And we are there at the end of the day just to feed them, just like Agent Smith and the Architect and the Matrix, just like the Archons. So I know H.P. Lovecraft was pretty much nihilistic. There's nothing that survives. It's just the way it is. And people, rightly so, have accused the ancient Gnostics of almost toying with nihilism. But the difference, of course, is that to the Gnostics, we do have this small spark of infinity within us, and that does, it will either become more trapped or we'll be able to get out with it. So that's the subtle difference between, let's say, the H.P. Lovecraft mythos and the Gnostic mythos.
How do you feel about Aleister Crowley?
I mean, I like what he did. Very important figure in the history of occultism and esotericism. I don't know about groundbreaker, in a way, groundbreaking, pioneering. Kept a lot of things going, but he never really spoke to me that much. I don't know why. I mean, I was thinking why, and I realized I like writers that inspire me. I'm not going to say good writers, but writers that speak to me. For example, and Crowley's writing, his art never did to me. To me, the art is how you can tell I see a person and how they relate to the divine world. And Crowley never did it for me. I like W.B. Yeats' poetry much more. And W.B. Yeats definitely shows very strong Gnostic themes in his poetry. And of course, he knew about them, just like Crowley did. But I like W.B. Yeats much more. And I mean, and that's probably one reason I really like the Gnostics, because as some have said, a lot of their gospels, as psychedelic and weird as they are, but there is a lot of beautiful poetry and a very inspirational words in their writings. I mean, again, it's one reason why I really liked Robert Anton Wilson over Terence McKenna, because I just thought Anton's fiction was just a great doorway, and it showed that he was really experiencing things. So then I was like, I'm gonna dig his other occult stuff. So I would say, to me, it always comes down to, are you an art? Yes, what did I say? All art is magic. So I think great artists are the true magicians.
Could we be headed into some kind of transhumanist future where these archonic forces have taken complete control?
Oh, yeah, I would say so, but I think right now it's been overblown. I don't see any transhuman apocalypse. I think at the end of the day, it's more of, sure, the elite want to live longer. Good luck with that. But at the end of the day, it really comes to eugenics. It really comes down to control. Who's going to live? Who's going to live longer? Who gets to breed? And how much of this sort of invasive surveillance machinery can we put into your bodies and around you? That's the real battle of transhumanism we need to worry about. But as far as the rest, I think it's not something. This is the part we need to worry about. The other part, we should worry about that in a few generations.
You mentioned earlier that you've had experiences with ghosts. If you don't mind me asking, what happened there?
Oh, it's been a few times in my life. It's almost, I mean, again, as I grew up in places like Mexico and Europe and Brazil, this sort of magic realism is always there. I mean, there's always spirits and ghosts. We don't know if they're true or not. It becomes integrated into your life. But, I mean, one experience I know for sure was working at, back when I was young, just getting out of college, I was working at this old building in Houston, and it was over 100 years old, and it was an English pub, but it had once been a brothel, and the madame had been killed there, so she was always haunting people, and the whole staff was always, I saw pants flying. It was part of our daily shift to see this stuff, and there was a few times where I did experience weird things, like sitting there, and there was a woman's voice through the speakers talking to me, and I was like, God, this radio news station sucks. And I looked over, and the stereo was off. And, you know, things like that, and you're like, oh, my God, this is there's some supernatural stuff going on here. So, that, I mean, that's just one example.
But you've seen enough to convince you that there's a reality to the paranormal.
Yes, and seen enough. And again, I believe to myself to be a skeptic. I like to cross-reference everything. So when you start studying people like Colin Wilson or Rupert Sheldrake or Gary Lachman and others, when you start putting that to what others have experienced and the data that's out there, again, you start. It is a very busy universe out there. There's a lot going on. It's a matter of, are we going to open our eyes? Are we going to take the red pill and expand our consciousness and let all these entities that are trying to speak to us, sometimes warn us, sometimes tell us their stories, and hopefully give us more of the truth out there?
How about telepathy? Do you feel that could be real?
Oh, I think it's very real. I think I'm starting to wonder if maybe we all were telepathic at one point. I mean, even beyond the days of Atlantis, if you want to believe that. Isn't that the story from Edgar Casey? But I think we were once telepathic. I think, here's the example. What Rupert Sheldrake, he did that experiment where dogs can tell when their owners are coming home. Even if the owner is far away, when the owner is far away at different times of the day, they'll start barking. He did all this research, and it's true. My dogs do that too. Different times of the day, I can get off the bus a few blocks away, and they're barking, barking. And dogs can also sense what? They can sense earthquakes. They can sense storms hours before they show up. And we just go, well, that's just their instincts, you know? And the way they communicate with each other. Oh, it's just their instincts. Well, you can make a good argument. They're very integrated to the nature, and they are telepathic. They are sensing, their minds are sensing things that are out there. I have a feeling that we humans, especially when you look back at history, how humans communicated and were more holistic with the world, we were probably more telepathic, but sort of the left brain, the reason brain, sort of took over, and now we've forgotten that. I mean, let's put it this way. As others have mentioned, the great atheist Sigmund Freud was very interested in telepathy, as were many scientists in the 19th century. They were researching in that. It sort of got shuffled away, but back then, it was considered a science, and there was very good evidence. And, of course, now today, there are plenty of studies with remote viewing and all that. I mean, the data, the science is out there. It's just that we, for some reason, we keep it in a corner. It's dismissed, but this data is very sound.
And unfortunately, we are heading into the end of the interview. But, Miguel, what I like to do at the end is just let my guests hop up on that soapbox one more time and just say whatever they would like to say to my audience out there. And please feel free to follow that up with anything at all that you would like to plug or promote.
Not much. I mean, if people are interested, definitely go to my site, thegodabovegod.com, or CAM, as I say on my show. And you'll find my books, the podcasts, articles, all goodies are there for you to see. I have a contact page if you want to ask me any questions. Social media channels are there. So just go to thegodabovegod.com and enter the world of heresy.
Awesome. And as I said, I am a huge fan of your show. I will continue to listen, and I'd like to have you on End of Days Radio again in the future as well.
Sure, that'd be great, unless the world ends. And even then, I think we can find some sort of form to communicate. We'll make it happen.
Hey, at least in that case, I'll be proven right.
There you go. You can tell me all about it.
All right, Miguel. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You have a good night, my friend.
All right, thank you. Really appreciate it.
And there you have it. That was Miguel. Oh my God, what a fantastic guest. Check out his show, Aeon Byte Radio. As I said, I'm a big fan. That's one of the shows that I go to so that I can learn. There's a lot of shows that I like to listen to. And of course, it's not just podcasts. Of course, you have to read and watch YouTube videos as well. But anyways, let's hit a break, and then we can come back and finish the show. Mm-hmm. Raising consciousness and awakening mankind. This is End of Days Radio. And welcome back to the End of Days. The end of days. The end of time itself. Welcome. Welcome to Thunderdome. Oh my, where do we start? Where do we start? Oh, there's so many things to talk about. What a great interview, first of all. We've been on a roll. What can I say? A roll. An absolute goddamn roll. Interview after interview. Mind-blowing moment after mind-blowing moment. Oh my god. I'm having a knowledge-gasm. Oh! Don't you love it? Don't you love to learn? Feed your head with knowledge until your mind goes... That's what you got to do. I learned that from a Jedi Mind Trick song. Don't ask me which one. I'd have to go through them. I like Jedi Mind Tricks. They sing about cool stuff. Oh, wow. You know what's funny? Well, a lot of things are funny, but... Actually, this isn't funny. This is serious. There's more shootings happening. There's nothing funny about that at all. Absolutely not. But funny in the sense that a lot of them are false flags and a lot of people believe them, but not funny in the sense that people are still dying and many of them aren't false flags. Anytime a real one actually happens, that's great fuel to the fire. So you have a lot of crazy people out there doing crazy things like pulling guns on people and attacking them for little or no reason. In fact, there was a case of two guys attacking a homeless guy, and one of them had like a chainsaw and the other one had some other large tool, like a machete or something like that. And they're just going out there trying to kill this guy. Like they have some kind of desire to murder somebody. Why would anybody want to do that? What kind of twisted thoughts do you have in your head? And how the hell do you find a like-minded person that's enough of a piece of shit to actually hang out with you and be part of your circle and for you both to go out there and actually try to hurt another human being with these items? This happened in Seattle, by the way. So yeah, it's close to home. Close to home. It's down the street. Motherfuckers. And if I saw that, I don't even know what I would have done. I mean, I'd like to think I'd help somebody that's getting beat up, but if they've got weapons like that, I mean, is there anything I could do that would be quick enough? I suppose in that case, it would be good to have a concealed carry weapon because you could just pull your gun out and point at them and tell them to cut the shit and get on the phone and call the police. And if they come at you, cut the shit for them. You know what I'm saying? So, okay, you morons that want to ban guns, what are you going to do when you need a gun and you see some homeless guy getting attacked by people holding chainsaws and machetes. No, I don't want to hear any of your excuses, because that's what you're full of, excuses. And it's funny because these liberals, they make me realize that the elite, the government, whoever, the shadow government, the cabal, they could really get us to believe anything, really. Because these liberals, they are the worst. They absolutely believe anything that they're told. And I don't mean to pick on the left, of course. The extreme right is just as bad with their Bible thumping and their ridiculous desires, such as the desire to bring God back into the school system. Come on, shut up with that, please. Freedom of religion. What is so hard for some of you people out there to understand about that? You do not have a right to force your shit on other people. I don't care how it started or how it went in the past. That has nothing to do with it. There was also slavery back then. But why would anybody think that it would be good to have religion in schools? Why would you think that even saying God or anything like that would be a good idea? That type of stuff could only cause trouble. We don't need that. Some people are this. Some people are that. You have to just live with it. You can't sit there and preach at them. That's the problem. You're trying to preach. Only I'm allowed to do that. I mean, wait. Let's change the subject. But what's wrong with these people attacking others with weapons? Forget the guns, shit. Forget it. What the hell's wrong with them? Why are they trying to hurt others? Why? 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 I'm so sorry. I'm not going to start doing effects and crap like that. I hate those type of radio shows. That's the only one I do. Why? But really, why? Why are people attacking other people in these very injurious ways? In these brutal... Why are they using such brutal tactics on one another, randomly? I think they're possessed, personally. That's my theory. There's something out there, and who knows? It might even have something to do with some of these false flags. I know most of them are just orchestrated by PSYOPs. But I wonder if some of them have some kind of, like, possession element to them, where you're walking along and suddenly there's something inside of you, and then you go and do something terrible. And who's to say that if you become possessed, you just commit some random act of violence? How do we know some of these beings possessing people aren't smarter than that, or they can't participate in some type of agenda? How do we know that? You hear a lot of gang stalking talk nowadays, and it does seem that there could be perhaps an other dimensional or demonic element to some of this gang stalking stuff. Maybe alien. Who knows? But there's something going on. The Face Eater. I've been talking about the Face Eater since the face got eaten. The guy was not on bath salts. That's what we all thought at first. But they did find out that the guy had a little pod in the system. That's probably not going to do much. Otherwise, I'd be killing a lot of people. Eating a lot of faces. But but they did find out that he was into voodoo. Hoodoo? Yeah, voodoo. Voodoo. V-O-O-D-O-O. Voodoo. He was into voodoo, the occult, and a specific type of magic that has to do with possession and drugs and getting on drugs and becoming possessed. Coinkadink? Of course, the media isn't going to say a possessed guy ate somebody's face. They're just going to say some crazy guy ate somebody's face, because everybody's crazy now. There's no such thing as demons. That's all superstition from the past. That's superstition.
There's no spirits. There's no anything. There's nothing. There's my beer and my cheese. That's all there is. There's no spirits. There's no demons. Why would there be demons? How could there be anything like that? That's from the medieval times. Those people were stupid. There's no such thing.
No, newsflash. There is. There is. I don't care what your belief system is. I don't care what religion you are. I don't care if you're white, black, Hispanic, Asian. I don't care if you're straight, if you're non-straight, if you're bi, if you're into dogs, if you're into latex and dressing like a clown. I don't care. Demons, spiritual beings, whatever the fuck they are, they're real. I don't know what to call them, but they're damn straight real. And you can keep lying to yourself because you're scared. We know that's the truth. You can't accept the idea because it scares you. And when your mind goes there, you start to shake and you start to quake. You know it's true. It's just better. It's more comfortable to not believe in these things, right? We're comforting ourselves. Just like they say, meaning the atheists, the materialists, they say that spirituality is to comfort us about death. Who's to say that atheism and materialism isn't to comfort us from being having the shit scared out of us by demonic entities? Damn! Just pulled an inverse refraction on your ass! Damn! Sorry, settle down. I know. I gotta take a moment for my ranting. I'm getting too fired up. I feel the power rising. I feel it. I feel it rising through my pelvis. The kundalini. I feel it rising. Let's do a news story. So, there's one particular news story. Ugh, this is going to fire me up. We'll see what happens. So, let me adjust. So there's one news story I want to cover tonight, for sure. I don't know if we're going to get to them all. I don't know if we're going to get to one, to a few, whatever. I can't go too long tonight. It's not because I don't want to do a long show. I just work tomorrow. You dig? So, I'm here now, but if I don't do a super long show, at least I'll do a lot of shows. We're either doing one or the other. I promise to give you guys lots of content. Lots of the D-A-N to the I to the E-L. Because I know that's what you want. And I know it's not just about me. It's about these incredible interviews. And it's about becoming enlightened and illuminated. But anyways, enough of that. Enough crazy talk. Well, we have time for that later. But, this news story comes from yournewswire.com. I believe that's the main source. Or not, whatever. That's where I'm getting it. And it's from George Soros. And he's doing an interview, and he claims he is a god. George Soros claims he is a god and the creator of everything. However, the billionaire globalist also warns he is a self-centered god who believes normal rules do not apply to him. And this is the actual quote. "I fancy myself as some kind of god," he wrote. "If truth be known, I carried some rather potent messianic fantasies with me from childhood, which I felt I had no control. Which I felt I had to control. Otherwise, they might get me in trouble." And then the interview, okay, the Britain's Independence newspaper, that's where this comes from. Okay, I like to give the proper source. But anyways, Soros doubled down once they asked him to elaborate. He said, "It is a sort of disease when you consider yourself some kind of god, the creator of everything. But I feel comfortable about it now since I began to live it out." So there you have it. So many things to be said about this. This is like the EA co-edding, becoming a living god thing. And, you know, I really kind of took that whole thing to heart. And sometimes I'll say, oh, I'm a god, or we're all gods. I think that's a very empowering statement. It's no doubt that this man, George Soros, has this state of mind has gotten him very far in life. I don't know if he was born into this money or what, but it's at least done something for him. But I have a feeling he's not the type who says, I am a god and everybody is a god. I think he probably thinks he's the only one. I created everything. Well, if I say I'm a god, I didn't say I created everything. I didn't create everything. I know that. If anything, I'm just a god, as in plural, you know, we're all gods. If you have the god spark in you, I don't know if everybody has that. I don't know if everybody has that. I don't know if everybody has a soul or a spirit. But if you have one, then in my opinion, you're a god. But George Soros says, I am a god, I created everything. No, George Soros, you did not create everything. You are just a rich old man. Please, just shut up. And this isn't even new. This is from 2016, but it doesn't matter. George Soros, you are not a god. I am a god, not you. We are gods. The listeners of this show are. George Soros, you're not a god. You are just an old guy with yellow teeth. If you're a god, then don't be old. Or fix everything in the world at once. See, you can't do it. You're not a god. How unrealistic of him to say that. So, there you go, everybody. This man who backed Obama, who funded his entire campaign, the same guy that funds a lot of this other social change in parentheses, this man that's having such a huge effect on the world, this man who seems to be able to guarantee the tides of change with his own will. He says that he's your god and he has a right to tell you what to think and how to vote and who gets to be president. That's the guy. That's one of them. This is one of many. This is one of many. These people, they think like this. They're crazy. A lot of them are Luciferians. Do you feel that they should be able to tell you that they are your god? I don't care if you're Muslim, Jewish, Christian, atheist, whatever. I don't like being talked to that way. We're not slaves to this man or any of the other ones. Why does he get away with this shit? Because of money? No, no, no. It's sick, isn't it? I wonder what his wife looks like. I bet she's hot. Of course. I mean, he's got a lot of money, but that's besides the point. This is terrible. Why doesn't he come on this show and defend himself? Why doesn't he come on here? He's got the time. I mean, he's got all this money. What does he care? Come on here and prove me wrong, George Soros. Tell me why you're a good man. Tell me that you're not this maniacal, megalomaniacal piece of shit that thinks he's better than us all. Come on here and explain this to me. Explain your words to me. I'm open. I can be convinced. Come on, you're so smart. You're so smart. Come on here. Let's do it. Let's throw it down. I'll take my gloves off. Of course you're not going to, because you're a coward, just like most rich people. How many times do you hear about rich people getting into fights? Never. They pay people to do it for them. They're very cowardly. And also, I've been thinking a lot lately. Let's get off of this George Soros shit. Fuck him. Fuck this guy. Fuck him. I kick his ass. Fuck him. George Soros. I could take him. I mean, he's old. He's little. I know I could take him. And I'll do it if he pushes me. I mean, I'm not saying I would attack him, but if he attacks me, I will defend myself. I'll say that. Just in case. George, so you know this. Yeah, that's gonna happen. Okay, anyways. So like I was starting to get to, I've been doing a lot of thinking, and I've decided that if some of you remember, back when I originally started doing this show on my own, you know, once I started doing my own show, so to speak, I really wanted to do some kind of video. I had some pretty elaborate plans. It's hard. You only have so much time, but I wanted to do some kind of video. I'm still not sure exactly what that's going to look like or how I'm going to do it, but if I could release a video every once in a while, I think that'd be kind of cool. I mean, you guys just hear my voice. I'm sure some of you would want to see me. I'm not hiding. I mean, I prefer when people can't see me pick my nose. I would never do one of those podcasts where you got a camera pointed at your face. I don't see the point of that. You want to see me make smarty alecky faces, or why would anybody want to see that? I don't get that. But I would never do that. I would just make actual cool videos of me going and maybe trying to find an underground alien base, or maybe I'm breaking into a vault underneath a Freemasonic temple and I'm stealing the Holy Grail. Those are just some ideas. I don't know. I'll think of something. But I do want to do something video related. And I'm not even going to do it until I know that I found something good and it makes sense. But my mind is going there again. I know that the main thing I should focus on is this show. I get that. I know that that is true. I totally get it. But I think, like I said, I think it would be cool if maybe I could demonstrate in some way or actually show people out there some sort of proof of something or another. I think that plenty of proof has been presented on this program. If you can't see it, if you can't accept it, that's one thing. I mean, I can't force you to. I can't force you to believe in the ghosties and the goblins, but I can at least ask for you to come in with a little bit of an open mind. Originally, this show was supposed to be for the common man, the person that doesn't know anything about this crazy nonsense, right? And somehow it evolved and it turned into the deepest of the darkest of the most extreme, the most insane, the most heretical, the most rebellious. We went completely down the rabbit hole. And somehow this show gained a reputation as being extremely weird and extremely bizarre and extremely fringe and a little crazy. You could say there's a lot of chaotic magical energies at play. Perhaps if they were more focused, better things would happen. Or perhaps not. Perhaps this chaos is our strength. What was I talking about again? But anyways, oh, that's right. So this show has a reputation for being extreme. Into the void. This is the black ship, and we're cruising into the night. Cruising into that great expanse of time and space. But we can talk about that later. We can talk about time and space later. I did want to say that this whole thing with North Korea, it seems like they've really settled down. I don't know what it is. Somehow North Korea all of a sudden is being a lot nicer after all these years and years. Just the villain, the heel of the world. And then there's one big hoo-ha, and suddenly now we want to be in the Olympics and we're going to disarm our nukes. And yeah, a little strange. I mean, Trump did say he was going to get this guy under control, and to me, it looks like that's what's happening. I know that a lot of you hate him, and I can see where you're coming from, for sure, but I'm sure everybody has to admit that hey, that's kind of nifty, right? I mean, he got the little guy to simmer down a little bit. I mean, I don't know what it was. Perhaps his bluff was called in a way, and at that point it was like, okay, you're not going to blow us all up, so what are you going to do now? What are you going to do now? Okay, now I want to be the good guy. You know, something like that. I don't know. But it did seem to kind of force his hand. And good for Kim Jong-un for finally stopping, doing something sane. Good for him for doing something sane. Right? That's progress. I mean, no matter how bad of a person you are, that's going to affect a lot of people in a very positive way. So not to praise him, but, you know, good for him. Thumbs up on that, at least, I think. So I got a email from a fan. It says, and by the way, just in case you guys forgot, I love you guys. You are the wind beneath my wings. You are the reason I do this show. And I've been especially fired up lately. I've just had a fire lit under my butt. I'm just feeling so like I just want to rage against the machine. I want to rage against the machine. That's how I've been feeling lately. Maybe I just stopped caring. Maybe I just thought about all this stuff from my past and it's making me go nuts. I don't know what it is, but I'm just fired up. And I do this for you guys out there, the fans, the listeners, the people that are the hardcore that listen to every show and just crave more and more. I love you guys. You are so great. And I do this show purely out of love because I love you guys. And even if you send me nasty emails or leave mean comments and do stuff like that, I still love you guys. Maybe not certain individuals in particular all the time, but I love this stuff. I love the feedback. You know, email me, DanielEndOfDaysRadio@gmail.com. Hit me up on Twitter, Facebook, The Real End of Days Radio, Skype, NinjaShoe777. Oh, that callback number. I got to make sure I'm giving that out every so often. Remember, that's 209-348-9810. And of course, stop by endofdaysradio.com for everything End of Days Radio. I should give that website at the beginning of every show, but sometimes I forget. So this one comes from, this is a fan letter. This comes from Baroni, and he says, "Dear Daniel, take off your foil hat, bitch. You need to get laid, brah." From Baroni. Take off your foil hat, bitch. I don't wear a foil hat, first of all. I'm well aware of the fact that those probably don't work. I have heard from other sources that they do, so I don't know. Maybe lining the inside of your hat with foil isn't that bad of an idea, or maybe it is a bad idea. Who knows? It could give you Alzheimer's. But this idea that anybody that believes in conspiracy or the paranormal is wearing a foil hat, come on, Baroni. What is Baroni? Are you Phil Baroni? What, Baroni? Baloney? You're full of baloney. I'll tell you that much. But this idea that anybody that's into conspiracy or paranormal is wearing, you know, you're throwing those derogatory labels and trying to ridicule and humiliate and shame. Shame, shame, for shame. You're trying to shame people into not being interested in this stuff. Shame on you. Why would you not want people in this, you need to get laid, brah? What does that have to do with anything? Why is that the primitive mindset that you have? It's like sex is currency and that's everything. And that's like any problem is because of that. Like, what kind of thinking is that? Like, so materialistic and primitive, like a ape or a dog, or it's just so like animal. You just, all you care about is getting laid. And like, so many people are like that too. A lot of guys, it's just, come on, read a book or something. Forget getting laid for a second. Read a book or do something constructive. And not to say that intercourse isn't constructive, but that mentality, like,
oh, I'm trying to, you know, get laid, and then women can be just as bad, of course. I mean, so the ones that try to get guys to fight with each other over them, oh, those are bitches. Don't ever fight over a woman, guys. Don't, especially don't fist fight. If she's making you fight like that, then she's probably not very nice, and she probably doesn't like you enough to not do that to you. If she really liked you, she wouldn't be, you know, she'd at least have the common decency to say, hey, you know, I don't want this, you know, you guys got to stop. But that's how you can tell when a chick is just really evil. You can tell stuff like that, you know, little games people play, males or females. You know, that's just so backwards, and that mentality of the college bro. I mean, he's saying bra, like he's like one of these college jock or frat guys. Frat, that's the word. Sorry, I never went to college. I don't care. I don't care if I never did. I don't think it makes much of a difference. But so I never was in a frat house or anything like that. But that's like a very frat mentality, right? Like, ooh, I'm going to get laid and slip some GHB in her drink. And then that makes the women just hate men. And they're just like, oh, I'm going to use men and just get them to fight over each other. It's all about me. It's all about me. Right? But that's the mentality that is just like society is eating itself up. The women hate the men and the men hate the women. It's screwed up. And it's not old fashioned versus new or progressive. It's just these little things, the way that society evolves, and it just makes men and women more and more sociopathic towards each other. And they both lack the most basic social skills to talk to one another and form a connection, and, you know, just normal human interaction. And to appreciate normal human interaction, it's just lost on people. Well, gone are the days of going down to the speakeasy and having a drink and meeting a pretty lady. That's all gone. It's all like Tinder and swiping and just, you know, you go and you get laid on Tinder and you get a venereal disease and then you're just like done for a while. It's that type of stuff, right? Just this mentality of like, oh, I'm just gonna F as much as I can and get real drunk. And it's just so unintelligent. Like I said, read a fucking book. Read a fucking book. Go on the internet. Watch some YouTube videos. Do something constructive. Learn to play an instrument. Something to improve yourself besides just acting like a parasite for your own selfish pleasure and taking advantage of others and then being proud of it and condemning others for not being that way, for being genuine and being real. You can decide how you're going to live your life, but that's not me. And don't send me your, you need to get laid, bro. No, I don't. I'm fine. You need to think about these emails that you're sending to podcast hosts. Okay, so but look, I only have so much time left. And there's times when, you know, there's times when I give my opinions, and there's been a long time when I kind of just kept things back. Right. I'm sure some of you have sensed that. I don't share every story, every paranormal, supernatural experience. I don't share everything that's happened to me. And part of the reason is because some very hard to explain things have happened. And if I was to mention them, well, let's just say it probably wouldn't be a good idea for me to mention them. And it's not purely out of embarrassment. It's not. It's, I just can't go there yet, but I will. I try to give bits and pieces and hints. Some of you that know me closely, you might know the whole story. And I do ask you to keep it to yourselves, at least for now. And I think I can trust you. But
This show's called End of Days Radio, right? I'm not a religious guy. I'm not. I'm not a Christian. I'm not. I think there's some good stuff in there, of course. A lot of good stuff. I suppose it was kind of forced on me as a kid, so I got a bad attitude about it. And I also find it not that intelligent to just believe in one thing. I mean, there's so many possibilities out there, of course. But this end of days thing, it's just, it's been creeping on me. It's been creeping on me. I'm not saying it's the end of days, but something is going on. The Earth. We've been talking about this for years, but the Earth has been taken over by something. There's some kind of corrupt, dirty, secret, elite cabal that with ties that go back to Babylon and perhaps even long before. They use snakes or dragons as their symbol. It is said that they descend from Nephilim, from fallen gods that brought knowledge to mankind. Perhaps I've just seen this all from too many angles, but I've been convinced that it's true. And all cultures and all belief systems seem to integrate these themes, so it's not like I'm sticking to the Christian paradigm. But there's a particular passage from Revelations that I find to be interesting. It's the bit about Archangel Michael fought the dragon, and the dragon was cast down. Then there's all this stuff about a seven-headed dragon, right? But I never really made this connection to the degree that I suppose I should have with these elite human hybrids that are said to be descendants of reptilian aliens. I never really made that connection. I mean, isn't it kind of obvious now? A seven-headed dragon rising? Isn't it obvious that this is nothing but different factions or different leaders in this snake cult that has been in control and watching over mankind from time immemorial? Isn't it obvious at this point that that's what the dragon is? That it is actually them? That it is the hidden elite cabal, which coincidentally happened to be followers of Lucifer? It's just all a big coincidence, I'm sure. But some prophecies are real, for whatever reason. I'm not saying they're all real. Some of them seem to come true. I'm sure you could find some examples if you really looked, if you really kept an open mind. I'm sure you know somebody that's had a prophetic dream. Perhaps you've had one yourself. Perhaps you have had lives in the past. Perhaps me and you, we knew each other. Perhaps we were friends, enemies, or even lovers. Wait, what? Anyways, back to Revelations. I do believe in past lives, by the way. I do. And what happened back then, I don't know. But I'd like to think that I've been fighting this good fight over several generations. And perhaps even versions of me from the future are lending a hand in some way. I could only hope. But it does seem that this seven-headed dragon is indeed rising. And what Revelations might represent is it's just going to take more control than ever. It's going to take total control. And perhaps part of that is the fact that it seems to hide less and less every year. There seems to be more jokes in popular culture about an Illuminati or an eye. A lot of celebrities are openly talking about it. Why? Why Luciferians hiding in dark corners End of Days, Revelations, Lights in the Sky. What's going on, people? What is going on? What's going on? Isn't that a song? What's going on? I'm probably not singing it right. But it does seem like something is going on. I suppose it could all be left to my own interpretation. Perhaps reality is indeed arbitrary and it's simply how we see it. I'm probably not doing myself a favor by seeing it as the end, but that's just the thing. I don't really see it as the end. I don't think anybody that believes it really sees it that way. What's happening is evil's tightening its grip. It's tightening its grip and it's grabbing us by the balls and it's squeezing. And we can either free ourselves or we can give in and we can succumb to them for perhaps forever, perhaps a very long time. But we are on the cusp. And all this stupidity that you're seeing on Twitter. and I apologize for all the strange tweets I've been making lately. I don't know. I just jump on Twitter and I get mad and I just start tweeting. Follow me at Ninja Shoes if you'd like to read my insane timeline of tweets. But I do think something's going on for sure. I know it. I know it to be true. And I don't know why I've been tasked with telling you all. I don't know why. I like to think that I've got friends in high places. Perhaps a few friends in low places as well. Who am I to say? But there's got to be something out there. There's got to be some reason I'm doing this. And I think this very well might be why. I just want to be here to connect some dots in some way and just help some of you see what's going on. You got to wake up. And even if you think you're awake, trust me, you're not. I'm not even awake. I've just got a tiny little sliver of an eye open, and it closes quite often. As soon as I start to see it, they pull me right back in. I've got the same pressures as anybody else. I don't choose to be part of this dark hell, this matrix, yet I am here. Yet I am here, and a force to be reckoned with. So, with that, I believe it's time for the... Hold on. Time for the... You're blowing my mind, man! You're blowing my goddamn mind! You're blowing my goddamn mind. That's right. This is the mind-blowing moment of the day. Oh, yes. The mind-blowing moment of the day. This is where we find the most mind-blowing moment of the show today, and we talk about it, or we mention it. I'm going to say that when we were talking to our buddy Miguel Connor earlier, from the Aeon Byte Gnostic podcast, I would have to say that when he mentioned that the Inquisition was originally started to go after the Cathars, I thought that was a little mind-blowing. What you think? Excuse me. I thought that was a little mind-blowing. What do you think? Do you agree with my mind-blowing moment of the day? Or do you have your own mind-blowing moment of the day? Leave it in the comments. If you do. But you know, what's funny is I saw a tweet on Twitter and it kind of made me laugh. It was this guy who was saying like, oh, and the more I become aware of all these sick elite Illuminati pedophiles and all this psyops and stuff going on, the more I realize why the Lord would want to destroy the world with a great deluge. And that kind of got me cracking up laughing because in some way, isn't that true? Hasn't the world just become a sick place with a bunch of mind control celebrities and a bunch of lies and people working in sweatshops? All kinds of perverted sexual abuse going on of children in dark corners. an actual network, an institutionalized network of darkness. What the hell is that? But it does make you think, because that is what was going on back in the day, isn't it? The Nephilim, they were corrupting the humans and giving them magics and technologies and corrupting them in sexual ways and doing all kinds of nefarious things, cannibalizing people, eating people. And it says that in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the end of days. Something like that. I don't have that quote exactly right. But you see the connection I'm making here? It's the same thing happening. These same people, these hybrids, they're basically just making the world a shitty place. And there's a bunch of freaking pederasts running around. A bunch of pedo bears. And those people, hey, I'd be the first to say, wouldn't it be great if they got swept up in some modern-day grand deluge? Like if the heavens just opened up, the firmament, the dome over the earth opens up. And water just starts gushing out. And you see all these pedos just like getting washed away. Just they're taking everybody. They got Hillary, she's getting washed away. All these, the Rothschilds, George Soros, they're just getting washed away, right? And we're fine. We're on an ark. We hijacked one of those big cruise ships and we're just like, yeah, we're good. We're good. We're getting taken up in the rapture soon. this is my scenario. This isn't what's actually going to happen, people. I don't know what's going to happen. Neither do you. So don't get cocky. But don't come at me with your materialistic atheist paradigms and tell me that there is no spiritual world. Because I can hang. I'm not afraid of you and your degrees. I'm not afraid. Come at me. Come at me. Come at me, bros. Come at me, Illuminati. Come at me. Actually, don't come at me. Stay the fuck away from me. I'm not done here yet. So, no. I am protected by a holy host. And you cannot touch me, for there will be great repercussions in space-time. You will be met with the fury of 1,000,000,000,000,000,000 angels that will strike you down and smite you. So don't F with Daniel, or thou shalt be smiten. I love you guys. I love you guys so much. I'm so happy that you listen to this show. I'm so happy that you ride with me on this black ship, which is drifting through space into the blackest night, absorbing the light from 1,000 dying stars. I love you guys. We will be back. Just to give you a little preview before we go, remember to go to endofdaysradio.com. Everything on the End of Days Radio. Remember to do that. But let's talk about previews. So what's coming up? We're gonna get deeper into the reptilian thing, reptilianos. We're gonna be talking to Dr. researcher Sandra Fecht, that has actually been working with people getting abused by these alien beings. We're gonna talk to her. Last time I had a reptilian guest, or a couple, leap over one or two and go back like two. After that interview, I had some freaking weird invisible big thing moving around my kitchen. So hopefully this doesn't prompt any more of that sort of odd activity of invisible masses moving around and creaking against the counter and the walls, whatever the hell is going on there that startled my cat so much. But I will talk to you guys then. Or perhaps sooner. You never know. That show is scheduled for May 6th at 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you can listen live, by all means, please do call in if you would like. We do shows at all kinds of weird times, so it's hard to really do the call-ins. But you can call. If you can check the schedule and be here when we do the show, you can call in. I'll pick up on you. I mean, I know it kind of takes balls to do that, but for sure. For sure. I got in the awful habit of saying that like every 3 seconds. People are getting so annoyed with me. Stop saying for sure. I'm like, yeah, I'll stop for sure. Okay, enough of this wacko. Enough of this wacko mischief making. Enough of this man with the God complex, this Daniel, who thinks he's some sort of Alex Jones wannabe. But he's even worse, because he believes in reptilians and demons. He's even worse. He's crazier. No, actually, I'm sorry. I don't want to be compared to that guy. Not at all, really. But I do have a lot of people that I do respect out there. And I think I've mentioned it quite a bit. You know, there's some great minds that exist out there. And I've had the pleasure of being able to interview a lot of them, which is, oh, I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky, like the knowledge. I'm so lucky, and so are you, because this show's free. It's free for you and me across the Salton Sea, and you can listen anytime. You can email me at danielendofdaysradio@gmail.com. visit endofdaysradio.com. Well, what am I doing? I'm just like repeating the same shit. I'm sorry. Let's end this travesty. I mean, the last 30 seconds being a travesty. This was an amazing show. Amazing show. And we are on a roll, and we will continue this roll of, I don't want to say dominance, that sounds so demiurgic. This wave of enlightenment that we're experiencing. I think that's a little better. Sounds a little bit more Gnostic. All right, you guys. Good night.
Fuck yeah.